So I was, I did some shopping at Walmart today, and I felt like I really had to go get some. I wanted to eat fish, basically. So I went to a chip wagon and ordered fish, and I parked my car there. It's a pretty nice, it's a '93 Cadillac Fleetwood. It's a good looking car, and it was a
Whoa, you
beautiful
got robot
day.
eyes.
Sun was shining. I'm dressed pretty nice. I'm wearing a nice blue collared shirt, some nice Abercrombie shorts. I had my aviators on. I had my gold cross out. I was looking like a pretty good guy. Anyway, so I order my fish and I go back to my car, and I'm starting to squeegee my windows because they're a bit dirty. And this girl rolls in, this hot blonde, probably 20, 21. She's wearing a white shirt and some Daisy Dukes, and she's pretty good looking. She orders some fish too, okay? Whatever. A few minutes later, when I go back to pick up my fish, it starts raining. So I'm there waiting by the trailer, and it's raining there, and we're getting a bit wet. And she comes walking along to pick up her fish. And she's obviously a bit wet too. And she says to me, "Wow, that came out of nowhere, talking about the rain." And I go like, "Ah, yeah, it did." And she goes, "I guess white wasn't the best color to wear today." And I'm just like, "Oh yeah, no kidding." And I really didn't know what to say, but clearly this attractive girl was giving me an opportunity to say something. So the lesson learned here is that, if I were a more smooth guy, like a Sterling or a Matus, I'd probably be having sexual relations with this girl in 2 weeks or so. But because I'm not, I'm here eating fish and chips, doing a podcast right now. So that's the story of my day.
Cool story, bro.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the DK and Comet Show. I'm Comet.
And I'm DK.
Today we have a few very special guests, including Kara.
Hey everyone.
As well as John Endgamer Barber.
Howdy.
And I say this is a special episode because what we're going to be doing is we're going to do a total recap of round one. But first we're going to start because Hugo has a question for John.
Do I?
Yes, you do.
Oh yeah, you mean about the whole Clash of the Titans concept thing?
Or yes.
Yeah, that's where you were heading, right? So yeah, John has to fill us in about the details about that plan. Because
yeah, I'm still up for doing it if people want it. Usually, as we get to the end of a contest, people are kind of burned out on it, but we'll have to see how people feel, because I do think it'd be pretty fun. Basically, what Kara's talking about, this is something we talked about a couple weeks ago in the chat room, is we would have whoever wins this contest go on and face all of the previous champions. And the way I think it would work best is if we do it in kind of a gauntlet, which would mean, say, if QB won, QB would go on and face Snap in the first round, because we kind of thought Snap would probably be the weakest of the past champions. And then whoever wins between those two would go on and face Shade and so forth until all the past champs would get their own chance to kind of defend their title. And then we'd see who came out on top in the end. So, if there's interest, if people think that sounds like a good idea, I could sure go ahead with it. We could just run it on the webpage, same system and everything, and have a kind of just for fun wrap-up section to this year's contest.
All right. So before we do our little recap, we're going to look at the final three matches, which we didn't get around to looking at yet in any other podcast. And we'll start with my own match, which was me defeating Simon 39-24. Does this result surprise anyone?
No, not to me. I expected you to win pretty comfortably here. One thing that was kind of surprising was the fact that Simon was able to take so many GoldenEye votes but still lose by such a huge margin. I mean, you won with over 60% of the vote, but Simon won GoldenEye 20-14. So I guess that was a little bit surprising. But then again, you did dominate chat 29-10. So that's really where you picked up most of your votes. But yeah, I'm not surprised by this result.
Yeah, the margin doesn't shock me too much. Third and I set the line at 63%, and he ended right at 62%. So pretty in line with expectations. The only thing I was upset about was you needed like two more votes to get the over, which I picked. And then I would have had 10 correct picks in a row on the spread. It would have been glorious. But you did let me down there, Comet, so...
It was a confirmed spread upset.
I think what surprised me the most about this match is that I actually had a better performance in Europe than I did in North America. I only had 59% of the votes in North America, but I had 66% in Europe. I thought that was a little strange.
Yeah, somehow the French contesters in this year's contest are pretty weak.
Europe seems to be split more this year than in the past. It used to be if there was a European in the match, that whole continent would support them. And now this year it's like there's Europe voting people, and then there's like GoldenEye support, anyone who plays GoldenEye kind of people. And so the trends just haven't been very consistent out of that continent like they had been in years past. Just a little weird.
Yeah, Europe's definitely been weird this year, especially with some of the results we've seen. I mean, going back to like Shep losing Europe in his loss to Trent, and there have probably been other weird results in the Europe block as well, but it's definitely been sort of a strange voting block this year.
Moving on to the next match, we had PYL scoring the victory over Henrik by a score of 35-26. And PYL put up one of the most dominating chat performances so far this year, winning 30-7. And that was just, in itself, was too much for Henrik to overcome.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, even given the fact that PY has been less active in chat as of lately, but he still gets all the chat support, and you know.
Yeah, I think we, for the most part, the Elite had this match pegged pretty well. It was another perfect line on the spread, and almost everyone in their brackets went with PYL, which kind of surprises me, because I don't think this result, you would have seen it in any past year. When you get a, you know, fairly well-respected gamer like Henrik, who's going to get support from the active gamers against PYL, who's basically chat every once in a while and then going to the meets. I mean, that's his whole appeal. You never would have seen this upset in past years, I don't think. But we all knew going in that the meet and the chat room were going to be big factors, and that's just how it played out. It was just enough to get the job done here.
Yeah, Henrik is like also known only for playing the games, and you see with every year that support you get from playing the games only is getting less and less every year. So
yeah, I'd have to agree. And one other note on this match, since PYL is also active in the card community, not just within the Elite, it looks like five carders did show up in this match, and PYL swept them 5-0. So that sort of helped cushion his lead a little bit.
Moving on to a kind of similar match, we had Henning taking out PDO by a score of 32-19. And this was kind of a little bit opposite of last match, although PDO hasn't been very active in the past couple of years. You know, some even think it was a surprise he made the contest at all, but he's always he always draws really strongly from North America, as he showed in this match, only losing by a single vote. But he got crushed in Europe 14-2, which allowed Henning to take this match.
Yeah, it's finally a match where the European voters really supported the European contester.
And that makes sense in this case, because PDO never played GoldenEye hasn't done anything in PD since 2001 and just isn't interested in any of the European stuff. Soccer, you know, he's a hokey and NFL football kind of guy, pretty much, when you do see him in chat. So there's really no reason for a European to support him. So that made sense. But yeah, I give PDO a lot of credit. You know, he only pops into chat every once in a while, and yet somehow he's still maintained a very respectable showing here and proved that he did deserve to make the contest, even if he just barely slipped in.
Yeah, this result isn't all that surprising. Although you mentioned how PDO's been so inactive in the games lately, he actually did win Perfect Dark 9-6, which is a little bit surprising because Henning, although he's better known now as a GoldenEye player, I think Henning actually got his start in Perfect Dark before he really started picking up steam in GoldenEye. I think he was getting good times in PD first, correct me if I'm wrong. But
yeah, he has some really respectable times, actually. But people kind of forgot about those because they're pretty old personal records by now already. So that could explain it a bit.
Okay, so now that we have first round covered, we're going to just take a look back and recap what we thought were some of the best matches. And I think in the first episode, we looked at a few of the matches that we thought would be some nice draws. One of those was the Clemens Paragon match, and it was a matchup of currently one of the top players in GoldenEye against one of the top Perfect Dark players of the past. And Clemens was able to take this, but Paragon drew a lot of support. John, I want your thoughts on this match.
Well, I wasn't all that shocked with it, really. I mean, I think we talked about this a little before, but Clemens has always been a huge anti-vote kind of guy. And Paragon, of course, we knew he was able to pull these kind of upsets. He did it just last year against a one seed. And if anything, I was impressed that Clemens held up so well. He still got some anti-votes, but maybe half of what he would have gotten last year. And that was pretty much the turning point here, that I was able to keep his head above water. and now, you know, he went to the Michigan meet. There's talk of him coming to Virginia. And if that plays out that way, like kind of like we talked about earlier, I think he could make a run now that people seem to be coming around on him as a decent guy.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't all that surprised with the result, but I think Clemens really is starting to come around and picking up steam as a contest force. I think he's going to have his hands full with Patrick in the second round, just because there's so much same fan base factor there. And
yeah, but I'm really not surprised, like, at all that Clemens won that match, because I think if there's like one person who would be the ideal person to win from people like Paragon, then it's Clemens, because you really see these days that people rather vote for someone who is active in the game and they want to support active players than vote for someone who is a legend, obviously, but maybe doesn't even care about the contest at all or wouldn't even notice his winning. So I think that's changing a bit. You see all the legends like going out in the contest really early.
Yeah, and some of them not even making the contest. In a similar matchup, we had Third taking out YE, and of course YE is another legend around here, and Third is another new schooler. I'm not sure if he plays the games at all. I know he did for a little bit, but he's very active in the community, and once again, the new school prevails rather easily.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the new school, they're winning these matchups and they're moving on, but I still have to give credit to, you know, some of these legendary guys. You know, YE and Paragon and Ten Ham just recently, I mean, they all went out, but they all kept it Well, we did have third at 55%, so he did go over. But, I mean, they're all keeping it in that relatively close range where they're losing a little bit from past years, but they're still holding on pretty strong. But like Kara said, it's just not like in the past where you could have Marsh, who hadn't made a post in 2 years, go against someone active and beat him handily. Like, that's not going to happen anymore. But I still just want to make sure I give these legends credits. They are still having a lot of support. People are really sticking with them. It's just not quite the 50% they need to move on anymore.
I think when you mentioned Marsh, and I think he was really part of, you know, with the changing point was where the old school people started to fall out. I believe Marsh lost a match against Goose a few years back where he was favored to win.
Yes, that was one of the that was the definite turning point.
Another match we had picked out before we went into the contest was the Patrick Neo match, which we really pegged with this one. Patrick ended up taking it by just 2 votes, 29-27. I think going in, we said this one could really go either way, so I'm sure no one's surprised by the result.
Not really. I mean, sure, Neo has the chat room support, but then Patrick was able to counter with, you know, Virginia meet and European meets and seeing so many people in person. So, I mean, those are the two biggest factors, at least from what we've seen so far in round one. So with them splitting both ways, you know, it made sense that it was anyone's match right up until the last few votes in that one.
Don't forget the Australian block, which Neo took 3-0. Amazing victory there.
Yeah, definitely. This was definitely one of the marquee matches of the first round, and going in, it was definitely a toss-up. It's actually sort of surprising that Neo was able to steal so many GoldenEye votes and not pull off the win. I mean, he only lost 19-13, but he just didn't manage to come out on top, which is a little bit surprising. But yeah, the end result, a really close match between two really well-liked guys.
In the end, the favorite in this case, which was... No, the favorite was Neo, I guess, or was it Patrick?
I think it was a total toss-up.
Yeah, I think the line was set at 50% for this one.
Oh, it was. Okay, because I was going to say something about how there have been like only three upsets this whole first round, because looking at the results of all the matches, I can only count three matches where only a sixth seed or lower won his first round. That's pretty remarkable, right?
And one of those is another match we picked out beforehand, and that was the Shep versus Trent match. And we did take a look at this before the contest started, and I think we said it was going to be a close, good match, but I think most of us pretty much agreed that Shep was actually going to take this match. And what surprised me the most is that, you know, Shep took the North America block, but he still lost the match.
Yeah, I think not the result itself, because going into the contest, I thought this was going to be another really close match between two sort of different guys, Shep being the big-time chatter, Trent being more of a gamer. But this thing that's really surprising about this match, and I mentioned it earlier, is the fact that Shep lost Europe, which is just really incredible considering, you know, how much power he's had there in past contests. And
so how did that happen? Because I really can't imagine anyone end up voting Shep. So how did it happen?
Well, I think some of it might be the Europeans that have met Trent in person, whether it be at Virginia or other meets, may have gone hit Trent's way. But I mean, you gotta figure that every other European would be probably voting for Shep. So,
and there there are also probably a couple of European guys that don't even know Shep.
Yeah, that's true. If they haven't been in chat, but you know, it doesn't surprise me that the GoldenEye European voters vote for Trent. But any really European chatters, I think that they would probably be a lock for Shep most of the time.
It's just Shep is kind of an odd guy in that, you know, he's the European, but he's got very American tastes. If you do talk to him in chat, it's going to be about MMA or NFL football or betting or, you know, any of those things that normally you'd think like a QB or a Wheat would be the one talking about. So I could see how Europeans who are just more into the games and going to meets and stuff like that would not really know him or care that much about him. But this was still, to me, the most shocking result of round one, and the one that I pegged probably the worst. Me and Third had Shep up, you know, above 60% in the line, and I honestly thought it was going to end up in that range. I know on the podcast you guys had talked about, you know, Trent's a good matchup for him. He can make this close, but I wasn't really buying it. And this was one of the few times so far in this contest where I was really proved wrong.
But I think this was definitely our most exciting match of the first round. I believe this match was tied 13 times after 0-0.
I think so, yep.
And it also had Trent taking the final two votes of the day. It was really a back-and-forth match all day, really.
It also had potentially the best vote of the day of the year. Someone said, this is an anti-vote for Shep, but I'm also paying Trent for him voting for me. Shep can go ahead and diss my book all he wants, but once it gets published, he better not ask for a signed copy.
Yeah.
Sick burn.
Wonder who that was.
No idea.
Speaking of wondering who it was, another match we looked at before the contest was the QB versus Alec match. I mean, everyone was looking for the possible Alec upset. Didn't happen, though. Does this result surprise anybody?
Nope.
I mean, I would say I'm surprised that Alec got 14 people to support him, but he was in, you know, kind of a perfect situation as far as that goes, as far as everyone knew he was such an underdog and he had no chance to win. And then he's promising, oh, I'll vote you back. So getting 14, I guess, seems about right. But I mean, we set the line at 85 for QB and he only got 78%, but I'm not worried about him at all. He still should probably be the favorite to go all the way this year.
I think that's all the matches we looked at before the contest, ones we really pegged as being the good ones, but we did miss a few. One of them being the Shadow Zero Nate match. And I think this match was a little closer than we expected. I mean, I'm not surprised that Nate did as well as he did, but I did expect Shadow Zero to win this a little more convincingly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I've been saying in past episodes, Shadow Zero has just sort of always had a strong European and chat backing, sort of regardless of what he's actually posting in chat, whether he's just celebrating recent TV shows he's watched or posting Lemon Party links. Doesn't really seem to matter. He's just always been a formidable force in the contest, but I do agree that this win was really underwhelming for him. With no disrespect to Nate, and I think he's definitely going to have his hands full in the next round, and his chances of winning his second round match against Matus, who had a really dominating victory against Lockwood, aren't looking all that promising right now.
Well, I think this was the first match that signaled what the trend was going to be, at least for round one. What we've seen so far is that meeting people in person, you know, organizing or attending these meets is going to be a big deal. And because that's pretty much all that Nate has going for him, aside from a little bit of chat here and there. And yet he came within, you know, one voter changing his mind of taking this into a tiebreak situation. So, yeah, that was the first of many matches that ended up kind of signaling that trend so far this year.
Another match I think we mentioned before the contest, but I'm not sure, but it was the Taka and Fanny match. And this was another really, really exciting match. And the thing I liked about this match, of course, we had Fanny winning 30-29, but it was actually the Australian block that decided this match, as the North American European blocks were both tied dead even.
I'm still shocked that Fanny won this. Sorry, I just got to say that. I mean, I realize Taka doesn't post much or whatever, but usually when you get kind of a legendary, really high-scoring, really respected gamer against someone who is well-known but going to collect anti-votes, always in the past, you know, you'd bet on the gamer, whoever that would be, whether Paragon or Disco or whoever. And Taka, I think, kind of fits that mold. But Fanny somehow just barely pulled it out, so I gotta give him credit for that. But yeah, I think his run is gonna end very shortly here in the next round.
Well, did you just call Taka a legendary player?
Yeah, I was about to say, well, I'm gonna not have to disagree there.
Well, not legendary. I mean, legendary in what he's done in the games recently. As in, a new player coming in would say, wow, that Taka's really something. In the same way that a new player coming in back in 2003 and 2002 would be like, wow, that Disco is some kind of player. But no, I see where you're coming from. There probably aren't that many new people coming in to really be wowed, you know, in the last few years here.
The thing is, John, that Taka managed to become the world champion in Perfect Dark with only 3 untieds. And that basically shows how he did it. He just copied all current strats and basically didn't even think of his own strats or improved anything. He just copied whatever was already there, improved it a little bit, and then, you know, became first place really. And
I have to agree there. I think, you know, the legendary status is more than just being a great player, and definitely contributing a lot to the community by coming up with the new strategies and ways to play the game is a really big deal, because it's something that does stick around with the community for a long, long time, even if your times become null and void. We now have Ryan White joining us.
Hello there.
Okay, so another one of the really exciting matches we had was the Axel Silver Angel match, in which I think Silver Angel really overperformed in this match, as Axel ended up winning, but it was just by a single vote, 24-23, although this was also, I think, the lowest vote total in the entire contest so far.
I kind of disagree. I thought that SA would keep this one closer than people were expecting. I mean, you have to remember that SA is, you know, a big time Virginia guy. He's met a lot of people in person there, and anyone who has ever talked to him online will tell you that he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever find. And I think that kind of popularity is gonna get him votes even if he hasn't necessarily been active for a while. And like other people have mentioned, he also did the GoldenEye World Record database a while back, which, and people respect him for that, which shows, because he actually won GoldenEye 14-13. So, I mean, this didn't really surprise me all that much. I was expecting SA to have a strong backing here.
Yeah, another reason Silver Angel could have got so many votes is just because Axel really doesn't go into chat at all or associate with those guys. And, you know, Silver Angel's traveled across the world to see, you know, a group of 20 of them. So there's these 23 votes for him, you know, so that certainly was probably a reason that helped him out there. And, you know, Silver Ranger's, he's just such a cute guy if you talk to him in the least gay way possible. He's just so adorable to post with and talk to. So, you know, how can you help but not like the guy?
Yeah, I don't think it was really a matter of us thinking people wouldn't like Silver Angel, just the fact that he hasn't really been around lately. And, you know, Axel's always been a mainstay in chat. And, well, I think that's just what it was going from. And maybe the low Volk total really skewed this result. It's hard to say, but I know it fooled the so-called experts, as this line was set pretty high. I think it was Axel at mid 68%. So this
all right, let me just explain that. Okay. Obviously, people like SA. Obviously, he's fun to talk to, and he's been to the meets. But he's posted 2 times in 2 years, coming to chat 3 times in 3 years, and he is a European with the GoldenEye background, kind of GoldenEye upbringing. And what normally happens in contests that make sense is that you get a huge SFF victory for the favorite, who in this case was supposed to be OB. And so that's why we went so high with it. And I mean, obviously we overshot, but I still defend our placement of that line. And I'm still really impressed that SA, being so inactive, could still hang in there so well. So there.
Oh yeah. So actually you're saying, like, the more same fan base factor going on in a match, the harder it gets to predict with what kind of percentages someone will win, or am I wrong here?
Yeah, well, normally what SFF is supposed to do is supposed to make a blowout for the more favored character.
Yeah, essentially, and see the Matus Lockwood match.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that's supposed to happen, but what makes it tricky is sometimes, you know, with a smaller setting like this, we have, you know, around 100 people voting on and off. People know the situation well enough that they know now that, like, you know, oh, QB is really favored, so I can, you know, go and give the guy who's probably going to lose a little bit of help. And so that makes things very difficult in that kind of matchups. In matches where you get totally different fan bases, like GoldenEye against chat, we can usually be pretty accurate because we know, you know, 90% of the time, if you fit into those groups, you're going to stick with your group and back your guy.
Yes, indeed. I think we first discovered that theory back in 2006. So it's good that finally it's out in the air here for everyone to know.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, the past few years with the whole the spread betting thing, you know, it's impossible to get perfect lines every day, but there's been a really good job on it for the most part.
Yeah, I'll definitely offer some support to Endgamer and the rest of the line makers there, since I basically spent an entire summer setting lines as well when I was running the contest. And, you know, when you make over 60 lines over the course of a summer, some of them are just going to be way off. And that's just the way it goes.
I don't suppose by chance you have the results for how much the house has made this year, John?
Yes, I do. The overall update, the Elite has 910 correct bets, and 773 times they've been wrong. So, but we've had a few where the house has set a line to really trick people. We had one a few days ago, and sometimes we're going for that as well. Like, we'll set it a little too high to get people overconfident, and then try to hope the result goes the other way. So it's fun to play around with, but yeah, something to keep an eye on if you want to watch. It's just on the front of the spread page. You can see how that stat is trending over the year.
Another match here that it's really hard to see an upset, but it did have the lower seed winning, and we had Poker Mark losing to Dan Cervone by a score of 28-26. And I think Mark was the favorite in this match. If I'm not mistaken, he was a 3 seed. Is that right?
Let's see. Yeah, Mark really was a 3 seed. Seraphon was a 6 seed.
Yeah, but I don't think the seeds really reflected very well who the actual favorite in the match was. I think especially since Seraphon was favored in the spread. I think this is a case where the seeds didn't really tell you all that much about who should win.
I don't know how much value you can put in the seeds, though, because, like, John's theory just there was that, you know, when there's a huge favorite against someone who's probably going to lose, you might vote the person who's going to lose because, you know, it's not going to have an effect on anything. And with the seeding, it's sort of like the top one and two seeds. Those are the guys who got, you know, 10, 12 nominations. They have 10, 12 close friends. They might really not have any other connections in the elite, you know? So they might only get those 10, 12 votes, right? So that's why you can only take the one and two seeds with a grain of salt, I would say. And, you know, overall, they're quite meaningless. Correct me if I'm wrong, Endgamer.
No, that just about backs it up. The thing that's helped the seeds out is generally you get them by either meeting someone in person or chatting with someone a lot in the chat room. And it's just been fortunate for the seeds that those have been the two, you know, important factors this year. So it's helped them avoid a lot of the 6-3 kind of matches that you'd see in years past.
Well, that's really all the matches that I had pinned down. Does anyone else want to have any interesting ones they want to mention?
Well, I didn't have anything about any matches in particular, but I did, before the show, compile some interesting statistics about the chat versus GoldenEye block breakdowns, since we talk about that so much. I mean, basically, if you've been listening to this show, you know that for every single match, we say, who won GoldenEye, who won chat, and we're constantly talking about it, but that's because they're the two biggest blocks and they really have a big impact on who wins the match. And I just have a couple of statistics here that basically show just how influential these two blocks are. Okay, so just not including two matches where in one instance, the chat vote was tied, and in another instance, the GoldenEye vote was tied. Out of 31 matches, the winner of chat has won 26 out of 31. That's 84%. And it's actually the same for GoldenEye, whereas the person who has won GoldenEye has won 26 out of 31 matches. And if you look at more dominating performances within those blocks, for people who have won chat by at least 5 votes, they've won the match 21 out of 23 times, and that's 91%. And for GoldenEye, for people who have won GoldenEye by at least 5 votes, they've won 22 out of 23. And of course, another voting block that we talk about all the time, the all-important Australia block. Australia has correctly predicted the winner in the contest so far 17 out of 32 times, which is just above chance at 53%.
That's uncanny.
I thought Australia was going to be higher than that. Australia is just like, you know, when you think about Australia, you think of just like a really honest, good, intelligent collection of people. And, I mean, we talk about it all the time. I was thinking that the voters in Australia were going to be closer to 80 or 90%, but I guess not.
I guess there might have been some, like, 1-1, 2-2 matches in Australia as well.
Yeah, there are a couple ties.
The matches they probably predicted incorrectly were probably the really gay ones where the wrong people won, so I'm going to say Australia was 100%.
And when it comes down to the prediction stats in terms of the bracket predictions, I think there was only three matches that were really predicted wrongly. One of them was the Taka and a fan match, where 29 people predicted Taka and only 17 predicted a fan to win. big one was the Shep Trent match, where it had 37 people thinking Shep would win and only 9 for Trent. The only other one was the Yost Inky match, and that was 20 for Yost, 26 for Inky. And the interestingly enough, the Patrick Neal match had 23 apiece. So for the most part, the predictions were correct. I think there was only really one big blunder, and then a few little ones in terms of our predictions.
Yeah, but I'd say that blunder in the Trent Shep match wasn't the predictions, and it was actually the voters who made the blunder there.
Yeah, I mean, the seeds have been holding up pretty well, and the bracket's been holding up pretty well, but then if you look closer, a lot of those matches, you know, were only 2 or 3 votes from going the other direction. Like, you know, if you switch things around a little bit, we could have had a very upsetting first round. So I don't think, you know, we've got a real handle on this. And I think in the second round and forward, when we get some of these bigger names against each other, we're going to have a lot of unexpected results and a lot of things that no one predicted.
Yeah, because if Silver Angel pulled off the upset, only 4 people had him going into the second round, so that would have been a big one if he got that one extra voter for him.
Yeah, and I think there were quite a few like that.
Although, strangely enough, the percentages that are on here actually add up to 104.5%.
No!
It's a possible percentage upset.
Are you talking for the bracket predictions?
The prediction stat spread.
Go too high? Oh, okay. I'll look at that in an Endgamer minute.
Translates roughly to about 10 days.
All right, so no one else has any particular matches they want to look at?
No, but I want to hear Goose. I want to hear Goose's thoughts on today's match picks.
Well, I've already addressed this with Thomas Andrews, and I told him that we should ban using another Elite's pitcher as your contest pitcher. I compare it to sort of if there was an internet forum of, like, you know, 40, 50-year-old women, and they were going to use as their contest pitcher their own pitchers, but one person decided, instead of that, I'm going to use a picture of Scarlett Johansson or Megan Fox, she would clearly be at a large advantage there. Because, you know, those women are more attractive than your average 40, 50-year-old women posters. So, essentially, Adam Matus is gaining a large advantage because he's using an unfair pitcher as his contest pitcher. You know, I also find it somewhat strange. I'm sure a psychologist would know more than me about this, but he's using my pitcher in his contest pitcher. That seems like he's almost obsessed with me, and that's kind of creepy in some ways. But the only part that bothers me is that him using a pitcher of me will gain him votes because people like me. And if I used a pitcher of him, I would not gain votes for that. I would probably be anti-voted because, you know, Matus, you know, he's a weird guy. So, you know, that bothers me a bit. But other than that, you know, what can I do? I guess imitation is the greatest form of flattery anyways. So that's really that.
Maybe to even it out, we should just have Goose face plastered over all faces. Here out.
Make that's up for actually, it.
That's a really good idea, actually.
I don't think I could take that for like too many days. Goose on the front page.
I'm not sure what would be worse, having Goose's picture on everyone's body or just having everyone's picture be the Creed guy with noob written on his forehead.
They're like the exact opposites, right?
Well, another problem is that all the pictures of me are from when I was like 17 years old. So they're like not even accurate anymore. And Matus feels, you know, the urge to use them on his manly, attractive, tattooed, muscular body of a Greek god he has. So it just looks out of place.
All right, so DK, what was your favorite match of the first round?
I mean, it's hard to say. There were a lot of good ones. I think Patrick, in terms of just what I think was the best match, I think Patrick Neo was a really good one. I also liked Wool versus Hampton just because of the whole possible Hampton upset.
Yeah.
Thing that was going on there. I also
that match only became legend after it was done.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I also liked my own match against Speedrun Trainer. I thought that one was pretty nice as well.
Nah, I'd only give that match 1 star.
You better watch out rating things 1 star, Goose. You know what will happen.
Yep.
What about you? If Speedrun Trainer gets pissed, then...
What about you, John? What was your favorite match?
Easily the Shep Trent match. We talked about this, but it's the one result that really kind of blew me away, as in I never thought an actual upset would be possible there. And so to me, that's head and shoulders above anyone else, even though we had a number of pretty fun ones here in round one.
And what about you, Goose?
My favorite match of the first round, you know, as of right now, I can't come up with a favorite, but I can definitely come up with a least favorite. And my least favorite is definitely the Greg Wall Cliff Hampton match. You know, I just like to take this opportunity to point out how much of a travesty to the Elite that matchup was. You know, Cliff Hampton is such a nice guy. He's never made fun of anybody. He has 3 or 4 untied records in the last couple years. In my vote of the day attempt, I pointed out that's more than the entire Elite combined, save Ace, Clemens, Taka, Max, and myself. You know, so clearly Cliff is a great gamer, great guy, and to have him blown out like that, it just breaks my heart. It's comparable to the North Korea loss 7-0 to Portugal. You know, you just don't want to see these things. They're just too tragic to deal with. And, you know, that's just my least favorite match because of how upsetting it was.
I'm sure he loves being compared to North Korea. Poor guy.
I think I'm going to have to agree with John in that the Shep Trent match, in terms of voting breakdown anyway, was definitely the most interesting. Although I did enjoy the little rap battle between QB and Alec Boy. And also, QB's new rap is out for his match against Dirk. So everyone should give that a listen, too.
Yeah, keep an eye out. I'm going to make a topic and give Dirk a chance to reply in the next few days here. And see if he can... respond to QB's devastating battle rap.
Right, so. I highly doubt he will. Just a heads up. He might, actually, you know what? He might, like, make a piano freestyle and list off some ridiculous memes and whatnot. Oh, it's possible, actually.
So that's about all the time we have for this episode. From everyone here at the show, I'm Comet.
And I'm DK.
And we'll see you all next time.
I'll see your mom next time.